Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is Otto. You know Otto by now. Maybe you don't know me. I'm his sidekick. By the way, you're not allowed, according to some of the animal rights folks, you shouldn't say I'm his owner. I'm his human companion. Did you know that? That you're not supposed to say owner?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, but I'm okay. I own Otto. And he's okay with it, too. We had a man-to-dog talk, and he was fine. Let me give him a little rub, because his head is on this side this time, which is nice. I love this guy. All right, good to be with you. So, for those of you new, this is my fireside chat from my home. I'm Dennis Prager, as I told you. This is a chance for you to know me better and what I stand for. And my way to get your feedback, because I take your questions, I also get a lot of email from you, and I know that people watch all over the world. We've gotten questions from 52 countries, and obviously there are viewers in many more. So that means a lot to me, and it does this for me. It verifies something I've believed my whole life. An idea has to be good for everyone to be a good idea. That's all. You can't have a moral thought, oh, but it's only relevant to society X or people X. The human condition is the human condition. Cultures are relative. That's fine. I have no issue with that. This country loves this music. This country loves this food. This country loves this way of dressing. This country has a siesta or a rest time in the middle of the day and eats later at night. None of that matters to me. But when it comes to the ultimate questions of life and good and evil and right and wrong, it's got to be universal. Okay, so I want to return in my opening comments today, before I take your questions, I want to return to what I have always known was a major dividing line in the way people look at society. If I could ask people one question before finding out what they think about 10 different issues, I wouldn't even ask them first, do you believe in God? Believe it or not. As much as I believe that is a very significant issue. By the way, this is what I should talk about, because do you believe in God doesn't mean anything. I want to know what God you believe in, and I'll explain that when I do it, because it's a very important question. But that wouldn't be my, if I could ask one question, I will ask, do you think people are basically good? Because if you say yes, you will think in this direction. If you think no, you will think in this direction. You will have almost nothing in common on almost every basic political, social issue. That's how important that single question is. In fact, you can't be wise, and wisdom is the root of goodness. You can't be wise if you don't understand how flawed human nature is. I've never said, by the way, that people are basically evil. If people were basically evil, then it would be absurd to appeal to goodness, right? I never said people are basically evil, not once in my life. But people are not basically good. We're a rough mixture. Goodness is like gold. It's there, but you have to mine it. You've got to dig for it. You've got to work hard to bring it out. By the way, for some people, it's harder to bring out than for others. That's true. I acknowledge that. There is such a thing as a sociopath, people who are apparently incapable of thinking in anything but completely narcissistic terms. But putting those aside, for the rest of us, that is human nature. And I've gotten so much flack on the internet for this belief. People, and by the way, that proves to me that I have hit gold here. When I get a lot of flack on a position that I take, I realize, woo, I've hit home, because a lot of people don't want to believe that. Why is it so important? Well, it's so important because you can't make a good world, a kind world, if you don't understand what you're working with. If you don't understand the fabric, the material, the basic material you're working with, how can you make a nice sculpture? You can't make a good human if you don't know what human nature is made of. Secondly, the most important question any society can ask, the most important, is how do we make good people? That's the most important question. But if you think people are basically good, you won't even ask the question, correct? It's a silly question. If we're basically good, you don't have to make anybody good. It's so ironic. The people who believe people are basically good, the people who give me the most flack, are almost always on the left. In fact, they're pretty much always on the left. And these are the same people who will say, for example, all whites are racist. So wait a minute. People are basically good, but all whites are racist? How did that happen? If people are basically good, why is there so much of the things that you hate, right? Homophobia, transphobia, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, racism, misogyny, sexism, all of that from basically good creatures? Isn't that bizarre? It shows you, look, I say this because it's true. Liberalism is thought through, conservatism is thought through, but leftism is chaos. It's emotion. You can't speak about all these horrible things and then say, oh, but people are basically good. Where did the horrible things come from? Extraterrestrials? Who brought slavery to Earth? Martians? Who brought child sacrifice to Earth? Virtually, if not every society we know in the ancient world practiced human sacrifice, not just child. On mass levels. Basically, good people sacrifice human beings? Basically, good people enslave other human beings? Torture other human beings? I mean, mass murder? My God, it drives me crazy that people could be so naive because people don't want to confront painful realities. Though the irony is, it's not painful. I have known people are not basically good since I was a child because I was raised in a religious Jewish home. And I went to a yeshiva, a religious Jewish school, half the day in Hebrew, religious studies, half the day in English, secular studies. And I did this till I was 18. I'm very well grounded. As many of you know, I'm writing a Bible commentary, the Rational Bible. I've done 2 of the 5 volumes thus far. And I got a great grounding, just as Christian kids do. Christian kids who go to Christian school know people are not basically good. It's secular people who tend to believe people are basically good. Secular people don't believe in God. So if you don't believe in God, you better believe in humans, or you really have nothing to believe in. It's a pretty bleak world. There's no God, and people aren't basically good. That's bleak. But I'll tell you why it's actually not at all a bleak idea to believe the truth that people are not basically good. Then, among other things, and this has been true my whole life, every time I meet a truly good person, I'm delighted because I don't expect to. It's actually a pleasant surprise. Instead of people who believe that people are basically good, they get disappointed all the time. So instead of being disappointed all the time, I am pleasantly surprised all the time. Wow, another wonderful person. I am never shocked if I meet a person who isn't good. It's never shocking. They're all over the place. So this is the most important question. In raising your children, it's the most important question. How do I make my kid good? Every time you say to your kid, say thank you, you're making your kid good. By the way, as I've always said, if kids are basically good, why don't you tell them once, say thank you, and the rest of their life they go around, thank you, thank you, thank you. Why do you have to tell your kid 10,000 times, literally 10,000 times, say thank you, say please, say thank you. What do you say? Hello, you just got a candy. What do you say to Aunt Tiffany? Thank you, Aunt Tiffany. That's what you teach your kids. How to be good. Not how to feel good. how to be good. That's the most important question society can ask. That's why this is the most single most important question if you want to make a good society. What do you start out with? What is the human material? Okay, let's go do your questions. Here we go. All right. First is a video question each week. A nice innovation, I might add. Was that your innovation, Megan?
It was.
Wow.
Collaborated.
You felt a little self-conscious taking all the credit? I asked Megan if it was her idea. She said yes. Then she thought, no, Rodrigo as well. All right. Here we go. First question.
Hi, Dennis. My name is Candace Owens. My age is none of your business, and I live pretty much everywhere, but mostly on a plane. My question for you is this. You attended my wedding, but you forgot to leave sage advice. What would be your advice for newlyweds, especially in such a crazy culture?
Well, I am totally touched that Candace Owens has called in with a question. I really am. She's magnificent. She is a gem. And I am delighted. And you could watch her on PragerU. She has her own wonderful podcast each week, and she's a gift. Well, first of all, I didn't leave sage advice at your wedding because nobody asked me for sage advice at your wedding. I don't like walk around, would you like some sage advice? I don't do that. Many of you may not know this, but anywhere you live in the world, you can hear my radio show on the internet or go to PragerTopia.com and you can subscribe and you get it without commercials anytime you want. I do 3 hours a day. It's a lot. On Wednesdays, I do a male-female hour. I've been doing this for about 15 years, maybe 20. And I've talked to men and women, and I've written about this a lot. This will sound almost trivial, but the first thing that comes to my mind is be easygoing. You don't want your spouse to walk on eggshells. If you're easily offended, what happens is your partner then stops being real. Now, obviously, if you're offensive, if you're an offensive partner, then your partner will get offended. But I think it's a great goal to be easygoing. This is true in all of life, not just in marriage, but it's certainly true in marriage. I'll give you an example. I was talking to my younger son. We had a long conversation today. And he asked me, so how you doing, Dad? And I told him, really terrific. And he somehow mentioned about the remodeling of the house. How's it going? And it's taking a long time. He said, so, you know, is it annoying you? And I said, you know, I got to tell you, it doesn't annoy me. Because so what? Is my whole family healthy? Are you all doing well? Do we have a good relationship? That's what matters. You know what? Do you know two of the most powerful words that you could ask ever say in your life, whether in marriage or not? So what? You have to always look at the big picture, because if you focus on the minutia, you'll always get upset. Because there's no doubt on any given day there is something to upset you. So this aim to be easy in her life, easy in his life, is just a beautiful thing in a marriage. Another one is whenever an issue arises, I'll take a trivial one. Like, let's say you want to both go out to a restaurant for dinner. So let's say he wants sushi and she wants a vegetarian meal. I'm just making up something. Or she, even easier, because then you'll say, well, if she's vegetarian, she, you know, she can't go, what's she going to have at a sushi restaurant? So, and she wants steak, okay? He wants sushi, she wants steak, okay. So here's the way I would resolve it. Who wants what they want really more? That's the way I have tried to live in my marriage. I might prefer sushi. But if she's aching for steak, what do I care? So fine. Or vice versa. She'll say, you know, I don't really care that much. I prefer steak, but okay, sushi's fine. Now, obviously, there may be arenas of life where you're both so deeply impassioned that there is a real difference, and I get it. But in general, just be easy. That's my first reaction, Candace, to your question. Okay. Let's see here. Roni, 58, San Fernando Valley, California. Hi, Dennis. I have an observation rather than a question. Okay, observe. I was recently watching Monty Python's Life of Brian. Monty Python movies are magnificent. Magnificent. And a particular line jumped out at me. It seems quite relevant to Trump and the left, ignoring all of his accomplishments. All right. This was the line from the movie. But apart from the sanitation, the medicine, education, wine, public order, irrigation, roads, fresh water system, and public health, what have the Romans ever done for us? That is a very funny line. I remember it well. And all the good. It is an amazing thing that this man is so hated. It is, in my view, utterly emotional. He has a gruff personality. I fully acknowledge it. There are things he says I wish he didn't say, but I judge leaders by what they do, not by their personalities. And just one simple thing. Since I believe it is infinitely more dignified to work than to get government help, this record number of Americans who are employed is a moral good. Why would I trivialize such an achievement? And there are so many others as well, but I'm just giving that one example. This actually is a sort of golden age in American life, and yet it's depicted as one writer, a guy named Frank Rich, writing in New York Magazine, wrote that Donald Trump is an existential threat to America. One of the things about the left, no wonder they're not happy. There are so many existential threats to them. Climate change is an existential threat to Earth. You know what existential means? It means the existence of. The existence of America is threatened by Donald Trump. The existence of biological life is threatened by climate change. That's hysteria. That's emotion. That's not true. Amon, 33, Mississauga. By the way, you know how many years now I have been hearing that climate change is an existential threat to the world? In 1989, they issued a report at the UN, we have 12 years and then it's over. 12 years after 1989, nothing had happened that had made it over. 12 years after 2001, the same thing. It's still not over. It's not even close to being over. More people are living more healthfully than ever before in the history of the world. Then they point to all the fires. Well, do you know in the 1970s, far more land in Australia burned than in the recent fires in Australia? You know how many of them were started by arsonists, whether intentional or unintentional? Amon, 33, Mississauga, Ontario, Canada. Hello, Dennis. What is your opinion of Dharmic religions, i.e. Hinduism, Sikhism, Jainism, Buddhism? Thank you. I studied comparative religion in England in my third year in college. And I want you to know and I have written this, and I wrote this in my book on happiness. Happiness is a serious problem. I had a professor, Trevor Ling was his name. He wrote a terrific book on religion. Was an Englishman who had become a Buddhist, which was great. I wanted to study under somebody from an Eastern religion. And he changed my life one day. And I mean it. It changed my life. That doesn't happen a lot. He said, according to Buddhism, all pain in life comes from two things. Desires and expectations that are not fulfilled. And that was just eye-opening, cloud-parting. I saw bright truth. He's right. The Buddhists are right. So what I resolved to do was accept half of that Buddhist teaching. I decided in my third year at university, I decided I was going to not have any expectations in life. That day, I made that decision. I have not stopped it since. I have no expectations. I am stunned every day that I am alive, that I'm healthy, that my loved ones are healthy, that we're not at war. You name it. I that's one of the reasons that I am such a happy human being, because I can't believe how nothing I expected, and yeah, I've expected nothing, and I get all these wonderful surprises, health and love and friendship and success and you name it. I truly expect nothing. I adopted that Buddhist principle, but I did not adopt number one. I do have desires, and I think it is important to have desires. I desire to have a cure for cancer, right? I don't expect it, but I desire it. I desire many things. I desire things for me. I desire things for the world. Desires are wonderful. Now, you could have unhealthy desires. By the way, you could have unhealthy desires and not act on them. Ask men. Men have a lot of unhealthy desires, and happily, most don't act on them. Women have unhealthy desires too, but they're in a different arena. But in any event, this is, and sometimes the same arena, okay, for the record. I know I'm going to get, oh, what do you mean? Oh, women don't want sex as much as men do? Okay, fine. Women don't want variety as much as men do. Okay, that's just a fact. But I know you know a woman who does. I'm sure I know that they exist. We could talk about that another time, too. The nonsense that men and women are basically the same, I was told that in college, and that's how I knew that I was being taught a lot of nonsense at college. That was the giveaway, that men and women are basically the same. That teaching, by the way, has made so many unhappy women that that alone is a reason for a vast number of unhappy women in our society. I can explain that another time, and it's probably worth doing. Be that as it may, that Buddhist teaching was life-changing in my life. I don't have expectations. I'll give you a very funny story. I never told this. I don't even know if I told this on the radio show. You'll get a kick out of this. So my book on happiness made the bestseller list, on the Los Angeles Times bestseller list, as it happens. And every Sunday, the list would come out in the newspaper. So I would get the newspaper, and I would look in the book section, where was my book? So they list 10 books on the bestseller list, or that time 10 books. And 1 week it was 9, 1 week it was 7, 1 week it was 6. And I was very, obviously very happy to be on the bestseller list. Another week goes by, weeks later, and I look at the list. And finally I realize, oh, well, I'm no longer on the bestseller list. No book lasts forever on the bestseller list. But I got a call about an hour later from a friend, congratulations! And I'm thinking, for what? And she said, I said to her, for what? And she goes, what do you mean for what? Didn't you see the Los Angeles Times bestseller list? I said, yeah. I said, you're number one. And I realized I never looked above five because I never expected to be higher than five. I only looked between five and 10. That's how deeply ensconced in me not having expectations is. That's real. That's the best example I can give. Okay. I remember I went to a Jain temple in India, and I love studying these things and seeing how people grapple. What is religion? It's grappling with the great questions of life and realizing that the material world is not all there is. That's what religion grapples with. So anyway, I don't know enough about Sikhism. I can only say I have really liked the Sikhs that I have met, which, by the way, is enough for me because I do judge religions by their fruit. All right, so let's see. Richard in Malaysia. That's a long question, so I'll take it another time. Jono in Bratislava wants to know how the American election system works because so many of you do not live in America. So I'll end with that. That's a good one. By the way, I asked someone from the Czech Republic, are you happy that Czechoslovakia broke up into Czech and Slovakia? He said no. It's an interesting question. I'd like to know how many Czechs and how many Slovaks would like to reunite. I have no idea. It's just an interesting question to me. Greetings, Dennis. Thank you for the opportunity to approach you directly. Thank you. Two-part question. A, can you introduce the USA election system to us foreigners? Presidential elections, electoral college midterms, when do you elect people to which chamber of Congress, etc. Be good for a five-minute video. You know you have listeners, viewers from all over the globe. I do know. So we would all benefit from this U.S. election introduction. B, you mentioned you plan to speak in Budapest. Is there a plan for Bratislava, Slovakia, or the Czech Republic? No, but I would love to. So I will be actually in Budapest twice, as it happens, this coming year. And you can find the information at DennisPrager.com. Where's Dennis? Wherever I'm speaking, anywhere in America or the world. So to answer your first question in a nutshell, the United States of America was founded to be United States of America, not just America. This was founded to have laboratories called states, each working through its system to see which one works. It's a brilliant idea. But we united in order to make the United States of America. The states are very important to the founders. This country was not founded to be a democracy. It was founded to be a republic. They're not identical. Therefore, we don't have direct election of the president because the founders did not believe people were basically good, and they wanted to have a check even on the majorities, believe it or not. They were brilliant. They were giants, the founders of America. So it's states that elect the president, not the individuals of the country. So that if you win, every state has a certain number of electoral votes depending on its population. So obviously California has the most electoral votes because it has the most people. And I don't know, Wyoming or Idaho will have the least. So you have to win the electoral vote, not the popular vote, to become president of the United States. I think it's brilliant. It's very important. Otherwise, presidential candidates would never bother going to Wyoming or Idaho or South Carolina even to get votes. They just go to New York City and Philadelphia and Chicago and Los Angeles and Dallas and Houston and go home. That's not healthy. We want the votes of the states to be important too. That's why we don't have direct presidential election. Midterms are the president elected for 4 years. Every 2 years, members of the House of Representatives are elected. Every 6 years, members of the U.S. Senate are elected. And that's really what you need to know. Senate is 6 years, House is 2 years. By the way, the Senate is another example of non-democracy. California, with 30-something million people, has two senators, And Wyoming, with fewer than 1 million people, also has two senators. The Senate is a way, like the electoral colleges, of giving states great power, not just individuals. It's a very important concept. The Senate represents states. The House of Representatives represents individuals. And that's the way it works. So keep the questions coming. I hope you enjoyed today. I know it's important to me. Apparently, it's important to many of you, and I am very grateful for that. I'm Dennis Prager, and thanks for being with me. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these fireside chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.